Could you first tell me, Mr. Jessop, where and when you were born?
I was born in West Ham in 1913.
Which date in 1913?
6th of July, 1913.
And who were your parents?
Mr. and Mrs. Jessop.
Mabel and Arch.
I was the only child.
And what did your parents do for a living?
My father was on the Baltic Exchange, as a dealer on the Baltic Exchange. In those days, the wages weren't very high. By the time I was 21, I was earning about two or three times what he was.
Was the Baltic Exchange regarded as being a less lucrative place than the Stock Exchange?
Very much so, very much so.
Had your grandparents had any connections in the city?
No, no connections at all.
What had they done?
Shipping. In the shipping line, yes. Cardiff. They came from Cardiff originally.
And where did your parents send you to school?
I went to an elementary school called New City in West Ham. I went there from the age of about 5 until I was 14. That was the date you had to leave in 14. I went on then to a comprehensive school for 1 year. When my uncle, who dealt through Smith Brothers, said they were looking for a young office boy, which I went up and had the interview with Mr. Charlie Smith, and I took the job on the following week afterwards.
When was that?
In 1928.
What did your uncle do? Was he a broker or was he simply
an
investor? No,
my uncle was in the hat trade in the Midlands. And he used to deal on the Stock Exchange. And through that knew Mr. Smith.
Did you, when you were a boy, have much idea what your father did for a living?
Not really. I did go up to his office two or three times, but and he really wanted me to go with him. But I didn't fancy it. I didn't see any opportunity there.
Did you have any idea what you'd like to do as a career when you were at school?
No. No, until my uncle said there's an opportunity going at Smith Brothers. And I thought, well, sounds good. And I went up and met Mr. Smith, who was very charming to me. And he said, can you start in a week's time? I said, yes. So I just left the comprehensive school and started in Smith Brothers as the office boy.
Did you have much idea what the Stock Exchange was or
nothing
what a jobber was?
Nothing at all. No.
Well, what attracted you to the job?
Well, the thrill of it. The thrill of looking at the money side of it. There's always an opportunity. It looked to me as if it was going to be some very good opportunities to make some money there if I worked hard. And I did work hard. I mean, sometimes I was there till midnight. From 6 o'clock to midnight, I got a shilling an hour extra. So it was a big opportunity, and sometimes I was taking home, say, on top of my 12 and 6 a week, I was taking home about another pound a week. So that was big money in those days, in 1927, 28.
Would you say your parents had had much of an influence on you in any way?
No, no.
Well, how would you describe the firm when you first joined it?
Well, the firm, they were down on the floor of the house all the time, and then we saw them in the evenings at 4 o'clock when the Stock Exchange closed at 4 o'clock. They used to come upstairs, and we used to take the bargains, what they'd done during the day, and the contracts, and put them in the jobbing books. Then work the prices all out ourselves, and what they called the jobber's ledgers, and work the prices out ourselves. And then from there on, I mean, I'd only been there 6 months, and they thought that I could be adapted a little bit higher on the books from the office boy. So Sidney Davis turned up for an interview from Brighton College, and he was adopted, and I had to explain the whole routine to him, and he took over that. Then 6 months after that, he did the same thing to Henry Marks, who came from Westcliff in Essex, and he took over the office job, and Davis took my job, and I took a father job up still on the jobbers.
And about, About how many partners did the firm have at the time?
Partners had at the time, there was Mr. Charlie Smith, Mr. Kyle, and Mr. Wood, because at that time Morris Smith hadn't joined the firm. He was with Berger and Gosjork. So there was only three partners.
Do you have any recollection of the partners?
Oh, yes. Yes.
Could you describe them?
Well, Charlie Smith was a very grand man. He was a, you could talk to him like a father. And if he saw it, that you were making sense, you know, he'd help you on your way. We called him Dr. Carl because he had these pinch-nose glasses. It was at Romford in Essex. And he was another kind man, very kind man, but not as good a job as Smith. Smith was the man with the brains. Wood, no, he was only what they call a half-book man in those days. What he made in his book, he took half and the rest of the firm took the other half. He was a partner, but he wasn't what I call a full-time partner.
And do you have any recollection of what the offices were like when you first started?
Yes, we were in Two Angel Court, in Two Angel Court, and three floors. We occupied two floors of it. And it was like a rat trap. It really was. Terrible offices.
I remember it.
I think that was something like £2 or £3 a week. Very tiny.
Did you have much in the way of office equipment? I mean, did you have typewriters and things like that?
We had a typewriter there. We had a girl who used to do the typing. Well, typing it was to do, not very much. Other equipment, no, nothing.
No. And which markets were the firm trading in?
We dealt at that time only in the industrial market. We weren't in the mining market because Morris Smith hadn't joined the firm. He was with Berger and Gosjork. And we were only in the industrial market, dealing in all the leading industrial, Courtaulds, Chemical, Boots, Dunlops.
Was there anything distinctive about the firm, or was it very similar to most other jobbers dealing in those markets?
No, there was nothing distinctive about it at all, no. No, we were just one of a clan.
And was the firm what I've heard some other people describe as a spoon-fed jobber, in the sense that it was undoing a lot of business for brokers?
We did a lot of business with the country brokers, Beckerson and Blunt in those days, and Marshall. Mr. Smith was he took small profits, made large money, but he was what I call a small jobber, making small profits, getting into larger ones on the way up.
Can you describe in a bit more detail what the business with the country brokers involved?
Well, the country brokers in London, there were three big ones, as I told you, Beckerson, Marshall and Blunt. They were the three biggest, and they always came to Charlie Smith because he gave the competitive prices. They dealt with the country brokers, and they undid their business with the London Exchange.
And how did your own career with the firm progress?
Well, my own career progressed, first of all, as I told you, I did the job as ledgers for a time, and when I was about 16, you were allowed to get a red button, which meant each morning you go downstairs in the Stock Exchange and check the previous day's bargains, which was something in those days, and you met the other people in the other firms. And then from when I was 18, I was made a blue button. Now, a blue button was the next step to a dealer. The blue button, you could go in the Stock Exchange, keep your mouth closed, and stand by your senior partner and write down his bargains in his book for him. But that was as far as you got, until you were 21, when you could become an authorised dealer, lose the blue button, become an authorised dealer, which, as I told you, when I was 21, he made me that 21st birthday present, become his dealer. Because he recognised at the time, I would be a moneymaker. I'm not trying to, you know, put myself to...
What qualities do you think he recognised in you?
Well, I think he thought that I adapted myself well in the fact that I dealt well, I got on well with brokers, and I was competitive. And I had the idea, my idea was to make money. And that was the biggest thing in the Stock Exchange, to make money.
And after you'd been with the firm for a few years, how did you feel about having joined a jobbing firm? Did you ever consider, for example, going somewhere else for a career?
No, I was very happy. It was a good will, good spirit, and I was fortunate enough to make money, and I didn't want to go anywhere else. I had certain firms did say, you know, are you interested in moving, but never was, and fortunately I never did.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any early impressions about going into the stock exchange when you were a blue button?
No, I never looked back. I never looked back. That was my one thought. I was going to be a stock exchange dealer, hopefully a partner. Mm-hmm. In those days, we weren't directors, they were partners. But I just had that one feeling that I was going to make it.
What kind of impression did the stock exchange, the building, make on you?
Well, it was the old building in the old days. It was very old, wooden floors, no smoking. But there was a good will there all the time. If you kept your face clean, I mean, there were people there that sometimes did things which they shouldn't do. They always got found out. The thing was to keep keep the goodwill going, and you make it.
Were there many jobbers dealing in the markets in which Smith's was trading?
Yes, I would say, competitively in our market, in the industrial market, there were, 25 jobbers. Mm. 10 larger than ourselves, and the other 15 just about the same.
What distinguished the larger firms from you?
They had more stocks. They dealt in more stocks. And I would say they had more money than we did.
Did they deal in larger size?
Yes. Yes. We had to keep it down to our money what we had in the firm, so at the time, what money was in the firm. The banks would help you. You get your loans, and if you were good payers, they repeat the loans, you know, keep the continuity going. Mm. But we always dealt with one bank the whole of our life, Barclays Bank. Mm. I've probably heard that, have you? We only dealt with that firm because they knew what loans we took on, they knew our business, they knew our money we made every year. And with one bank knowing all your whatever you had, the goodwill was there.
Now, about this time, when you started at Blue Button, the Depression was still
Yes, we had in 1929 effect. We had the Hatchery crash. Mm. That was terrible. A lot of firms went broke, but we kept our head above water because we weren't very big.
Was the firm affected in any way by the crash?
Slightly, but nothing to uncover anything bad. We dealt in several of their shares, like Photo Automaton and Photo Me, and lots of stocks like that, which Clarence Hatchery introduced to the market, with no capital behind him, no goodwill, and he was found out. And they called it the Hatchery crash at the time. That was in 1929, I think it was.
And how did the firm fare generally during the Depression? Was it a difficult time for the firm, or you don't have any particular memories?
No. We came through well. Mm. No trouble. Mm. We were never in trouble, never had to borrow more than we had to. Mm.
Pardon? Now, you mentioned that you became a dealer in when you were age 21, so I assume that was sometime around 1934.
Yes.
Where did you learn how to become a dealer? Where did you learn your jobbing skills?
Well, I learned it through watching my senior partner, Smith. I stood by his side all day long, from when it opened in the morning at 10 o'clock till 4 in the afternoon. Mm. And I just learned how he did it, and I followed through.
Mm. And do you remember any particular qualities in him as a jobber that
Well, he's competitiveness. I mean, his prices were always seemed to be closer than the rest of the jobbers. Mm. I mean, where he would deal, say, for... If he bought 1,000 shares and sold 1,000, if he was content to take 3 farthings on it, which was £3.06, well, other people wouldn't look at it. I might put it down to the Jewish spirit. But he would take small profits and make large money.
Did you think there was anything distinctive about the firm's attitude to jobbing? compared to other firms? I mean, you mentioned, for example, he was prepared to take a turn and keep turnover.
It was a turnover. Yeah, a turnover with small profits, which built the firm up into a big firm, gradually over the years.
And who did you regard as your main competition at the time?
Well, there was Sanborn, Samuelson, mostly the Jewish firms. Of course, the biggest one was Derlecker. They were the biggest. But we were very friendly with them. We could always undo business with each other because it was goodwill built up through talking to each other.
Did you have much contact with the smaller jobbers?
They used to come and undo their business with us. There was about 10 small jobbers there that had hardly any capital, but they would come and they had their friends who dealt with them, but they would come to us eventually and undo their business, and that's how that was built up.
Now, you mentioned that Smith's was a Jewish firm. Were there many firms that you would describe as Jewish firms on the stock exchange?
Derlecker were Jewish. Yes, Samuelson were Jewish. Sanborn weren't. There was Donison, who weren't Jewish. There was Bisgood, who weren't Jewish. I would say majority, the lesser were Jewish. Where, say, there were 6 or 7 Jewish firms, there were the rest of them, 20 or 30 were.
Did Jewish broking firms tend to deal with Jewish jobbers?
Yes.
And did you find the reverse of that, that the Gentile firms tended to take their business?
No. They would deal for their clients on a competitive style. Mm. No, there was no way they would deal with a Jewish firm because he was making a wider price. Very few. Mm.
Did you feel there was any anti-Semitism in the stock exchange?
A little. Mm. A little.
How did that show itself?
Through dealing. They would deal with their Jewish friends. But that was to the detriment of their clients, really. Because as I said before, the Jewish firms always made the closest prices, the Jewish attitude. Small profits, larger business.
Were there many foreigners in the stock exchange, either Jews from Europe or Europeans in firms in the stock exchange?
No. Not in those days, no. No, none at all.
Now, you started as a dealer in 1921. Do you have any early memories of your dealing experiences, either particular failures or
Well, I was very nervous
successes.
To start with, because I knew that I had to do good, and I was very nervous to start with, and I probably could have made more money by being, more precarious. So I was very careful because I thought, so if I don't do good, I should be out. So I've got to do the best I can. Until I got a certain amount of money, capital behind me. And when I got the capital behind me, I certainly forged ahead again. Until the days when war started, I took on more. You could see there was going to be a war in 1939, there was going to be a war. So I took up all the Richard Thomas, Camel Laird, Vickers, John Browns, and all those stocks. There was a big turnover because they were forging ahead, making a lot of money. But as I said, in 1940, I was taken into the army, and I didn't come out till 1945.
Was it fairly easy for
And I never had any money given to me during the war. My wife, I had to go back to work.
So did the firm not pay you any wage?
So there was left. The firm was left with Charlie Smith and Carl, they were the only two left. And they weren't making very much money. And they couldn't afford to pay. Davis went in the army, Marks went in the army. So they all through, no, they all went, we all went in the army, and the firm was left high and dry. But when I came out of the army, 2 weeks out of the army, I was back in stock exchange.
He couldn't get his heels in quick enough.
The continuity was still there for all of us, which is fortunate, although none of the three of us got any money during the war. Couldn't afford it. So all I got was my army pay, and my wife went back to F.C. Simon, the broker.
Well, when did you meet your wife?
think.
I was 16.
1933.
And did you meet her through the stock exchange in any way?
No, it's through playing cricket in Wanstead. We were playing cricket and she was watching me and we went out and dinners after that and lunches or whatever you call it. We got married.
A cup of coffee or nothing.
We had our 50th wedding anniversary last year. We were born we got married in 1939, the year war broke out, as we say.
You mentioned that you'd taken up stocks that you could see were being helped by rearmament or
yes,
whatever.
Yeah.
Was it fairly straightforward for a jobber to take up new stocks in those days?
It was. It was in there because there hadn't been any business in before. See, I mean, they were what are called dead stocks. But with war armaments starting up and all that business and you know, everybody getting into that kind of business, the stocks became prominent and the other jobbers took them up. And there was quite a big flow of business. And they went from strength to strength. I mean, they probably trebled their prices.
Do you have much memory of the effect of the political crises of the period on trading in the stock exchange?
In which year do you mean?
Well, for example, either, say, the Abyssinian crisis in
35-36
or Czechoslovakia in 38.
Yes, all those crises abroad always led to falls on the stock exchange. They always led to a fall because, I mean, the uncertainty was there. The uncertainty in the stock exchange was bad because uncertainty always stopped people dealing and forced the market to close up a bit. Yes, there was always uncertainty, the foreign. Big influence on the markets in those days. Wall Street was one of the biggest influences on our market as well. I used to watch the Wall Street every morning, how they come overnight.
Could you elaborate on that a little bit? Were you dealing in trading in stocks that Wall Street was also trading in?
I was only dealing in British stocks, which Wall Street dealt in. My biggest one was EMI, that's the Electrical and Musical Industries, which I think is now Thorn and that. Yeah. And they used to ring me, see Wall Street was open at night, and they used to ring us up at home when I lived in Surrey, every night. I used to do, say, 10 times or 12 times in the evening with the Wall Street people.
And who would you be dealing with in Wall Street? Would there be particular brokers?
I can't remember the names now. I can't remember the names. They dealt mostly with Wall Street brokers. They dealt with the British brokers in London under their business, and the British brokers came on to me. That was the main thing.
So were they professional arbitrageurs?
Yes. I can't remember the names out there. Although I went over and sat in their offices, I can't remember. I went on Wall Street on the floor there. And
when did you first visit Wall Street?
1960, yeah. And so for every year after that till 1972, I visited Wall Street. You spend a week over and, you know, with the brokers there, had lunches over there.
And from there we went.
We used to go
West
to
Indies.
We used to go to West Indies.
It was very nice, very lovely holidays.
Barbados. Yeah. Barbados.
Was dealing with the arbitrage brokers an important
tough
part of Smith Brisbane?
Tough. Yes, it was. Like the mining market, they dealt with Joburg. And Davis and Marks used to go to Joburg every year and visit their people they deal with. You get to know each other better and you get an affinity. So they used to go to Joburg, I used to go to Wall Street.
When you say it was tough, what do you mean?
Hard. I mean, they didn't. They wanted the last penny out of the business, you know. They didn't throw business at you for not making any money. It was tough going.
Did you?
And you took many chances on their business, because I mean, next day Wall Street would be up 20 or 30 points, down the next morning. So it was pretty hard going. You had to gauge how you thought the market was going to open the next morning, which was very difficult because they were very volatile.
Did you have much contact with shunters, people dealing with the country?
Oh, yes,
exchanges?
Yes, a lot.
Were they a distinctive breed of
yes
broker?
Yeah, they were shunters, as you call them, yeah. They used to shunt the price, shunt the stuff from Birmingham and Manchester, those are two, Liverpool, down to London, and we undo the business for them, because they weren't big enough up there to undo it themselves.
In what ways were they different from the local brokers?
Well, they only did specialised stocks. They didn't do like a wide, varied stock like we did. They did certain stocks, mostly textiles. Mm.
Did they tend to be better informed about the different jobbers' prices than the other?
Well, like one firm, Blunt, Mr. Blunt stood by Charlie Smith all day long, and his runner used to come in from the box outside, give him the slips, and deal with Charlie Smith because he knew straight away that he could deal with Smith because he was the closest prices, he made the closest prices, so he knew he could deal in a very advantageous position, see. He could take the opportunity of doing it. He didn't want to bother to go to their smaller jobbers. He knew, once he opened, they knew he'd been to Smith. So he stood by Smith all day. Blunt and Smith had a great following together, you know.
How did you, do you have a following with other firms in that way? Were there particular brokers who had a relationship with Smith?
No. We always dealt on a competitive price. You didn't have any certain. A lot of people knew that you'd make a competitive price and they'd come to you naturally. But other brokers would go around and they would check their prices and if you were the best market maker, you'd come back to you.
Did you feel there were brokers whose business you never saw? I mean, thinking about the earlier period.
Yes. Yes, there were certain brokers you never saw their business. They also had an affinity with another jobber. And it's a built-in degree that they found it best to deal with a man they knew they could get on with. Not because they disliked the other jobber, but they had an affinity with them.
And was the firm involved in option dealing in any way?
No way. We never did options. We do now, I believe, never then.
Were there jobbers who specialised in options?
Yeah, there were certain two or three jobbers who specialised in options, yes.
Can you remember which ones? They were.
I think Durlacher, one, and I think Donison was the other one. They did it.
And was option dealing as a job a very different to the normal trading?
Yes, it was a very specialised business. It was taking a longer view, and options taking a longer view. The stock's going up or down. They take a view for a week or 2 weeks, which we didn't. We were a day-to-day jobber, minute-to-minute jobber, if I may say so.
Did you ever find yourself taking positions from one account to another?
Oh, yes. We used to have in those days what we called a contango. Heard of that word?
Yes, but contango. Could you explain what a contango was?
A contango was that if a broker didn't want to pay for the stock, the jobber would hold the stock over to the next account and charge him a commission. So the broker or his client didn't have to put up the money. The jobber took the stock, put the money up, and charged the broker a small commission. That was a contango. And that was a big business, very big business. We used to make quite a lot of money on that by involving our money and charging the commission over the bank rate.
Did the firm therefore need quite a bit of capital?
Oh, yes. We couldn't do that until we had a certain amount of capital. But as I say, Barclays were very good. The loan was always forthcoming because they knew there was no other bank involved and they knew our business. And the years went by, the better it got, the larger it got. And as far as I know, they still do Barclays only. And we let them know that.
Did you feel that the brokers used you as a source of information on the stocks that you traded in?
Oh, yes. They always came and asked the opinion, what we thought of, IDEAL and ICI was the biggest stock. And they always came and asked the opinion. You had to know what the trading profits were, what the dividends were. You had to keep your head, all these figures. Sometimes you had a book with the figures in all that business. But yes, they did. All right, they sometimes took your advice. Sometimes they'd come back and say, well, you weren't very clever on that one. Well, you can't be right all the time, but I would say 75% we were very good.
Did you ever feel that the brokers knew more about a stock than you did?
Sometimes. They'd weasel it out of you what you knew, whether you knew more than they did. They never tell you. Can you excuse me a minute? Yes, now every year the ICI invited the three leading jobbers in ICI, that we were Hadow and Turner, Sanborn, it was Tom Lutengore and Derlacher, we invited the ICI
Milbank.
And saw the directors of ICI out there and explained everything that was going on. Told them things and they told us things, and that was a yearly event.
Was that even happening before the war?
No, it wasn't.
No,
it was after the war. Greenwell were the brokers.
Did the jobbers have much contact with the companies in whose stocks they traded? Again, thinking about the period before the war.
No. There was no get-together about that. ICI was the only one I ever went. Well, we used to go to company meetings occasionally if we thought we could glean anything. But no, other than ICI, no.
And when did Smith start dealing in gold stocks?
Let's think, 1936.
And how did that come about?
Well, Morris Smith